Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to yet another episode of Gym Class All-Stars. This week's episode is brought to you by the Vigit Sports Betting app, fantasy sports betting where you can bet free coins, win real prizes, your one-stop sports betting fantasy app. Vigit, download it today. Your Gym Class All-Stars are joined today by a fellow podcaster, good friend of mine from the University of Iowa, co-host of the Big Slumpin' Podcast, Scott Morgan. Thank you for coming on the show. Happy to have you here.
I'm proud to be here. I love the show. I'm obviously, I go a little back with Robbie, but I've heard a lot about Baker as well. So I'm excited to talk some sports with you guys, and yeah, let's do it.
I hope it's some good stuff.
Before we get into it, do you want to just give your podcast a little shout out, let our listeners know who you guys are?
Yeah. So I do a Big Slumpin' Podcast with two buddies. We're located Northern Illinois suburbs. We actually went to Iowa and Iowa State. So a little rivalry there. And we tend to like opposite teams. I'm a Bears fan, another guy's a Packer fan, but it all works out really well. We have a lot of opinions. We're 100% biased and just not really true or factual at all, but we just have fun with it. We shoot the shit a little bit like Robin Baker here, but yeah, we just love talking sports.
Hell yeah, check these guys out. Their show is just as entertaining as ours, but you can decide if you like either one better. You know, all of you guys, it's probably ours, but all right, so getting into the good stuff now, we're going to start actually with the UFC. There was a huge underdog on the main ticket yesterday. That was Derek Lewis, a plus 350 underdog, knocking out Curtis Blaydes in the second round. Crazy to see. Lots of people probably won way too much money because of this. And Derek Lewis actually tied Vitor Belfort for the most knockouts in UFC history at 12. Someone just want to start, run down what kind of happened, how the fight went down, where all the excitement came from.
It's interesting because I was looking at the stats of the fights, and when you look at Blaydes versus our boy here, Blaydes had a million more proper punches thrown, like significant hits, significant punches. But like we've always said, every fighter has a puncher's chance, and Lewis got the best of him, just had vicious uppercut and sent him to the floor. And I would imagine went two different ways for betting. Either someone had that as like the last leg of their parlay, minus 350, and just got everything got blown up and their world was just a mess. Or he probably cashed out kind of big. And that's every sports bettor's wet dream. So good on them.
Of course. Anything for this stand out to you, Scotty?
I mean, just I like how Baker pointed out that the fight was really going the other way most of the way, but that fighter's chance of just one good punch and it could change everything. And I can imagine you being that guy that bet the plus 350 and just being like, crap, like this is, what was I thinking? I thought there was a chance. I read about this. I looked at the experts and I was way wrong. And then all of a sudden he gets that one punch and you're like, this can change everything. And then you're winning money. So
I'm a genius. Like no one can stop me.
Kind of like how the Falcons win probability at the late games this season, where you're like, there's no chance, and then they lose. Like, that's how I feel like sports bettors felt with Lewis yesterday.
I'll say this could be the equivalent to blowing like a 28-3 lead, something along those lines. Either way, great fight. If you haven't seen any of the clips, check it out. But like we said, a plus 350 underdog. So great job from Derek Lewis. That's pretty much it for the UFC. That was the big ticket there, but I wanted to give that guy a shout out. We are going to move on into the MLB now. We're going to start the biggest contract that has been given out, now the third largest contract in the MLB, that belongs to Fernando Tatis of the Padres. Only trails Betts and Trout for total money. So Scott, I want to start with you here. What a move for the Padres. What does this mean for that organization?
I mean, I think it's just really smart for them. Obviously, it's a huge contract, a lot of money, but over the years, contracts just get more expensive. And signing a guy that's 22 is a star. It's amazing. I'm really fascinated that, like you said, it contracts behind, I believe, Betts and Trout. All three of these guys are getting paid in California. Like, if you put them on the field, there's so much money, probably more than a couple franchises. It's ridiculous. I love what the Padres are doing, though, bringing in Snell. They got Machado on that team still. I mean, it's just going to be exciting. Like, I like that baseball is trying to get competitive. They're paying people, and I hope they can compete next year. That'd be fun.
Yeah, that's my next question here is, do you think they're going to give the Dodgers a decent run for their money?
I think the Dodgers, I'm too much on the Dodgers. Like, they were so good last year. I just feel like the Padres are doing all the right moves, but I just feel like it's not going to be enough. I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah, you're 100% right. The Dodgers came off winning a World Series and managed to somehow get better and sign like Trevor Bauer, for example, and kept most of their core intact. The pessimist to me, this Tatis contract, it's, you know, massive contract. The guy is a stud and a star. The $340 million just, it physically pains me to watch. Now, granted, there's a lot less cap expectations and implications in the MLB. If you have something like the NFL where you have a star that you sign to a big contract and they happen to get traded, you take on a lot of dead weights. I'm not referencing anything in particular, but you kind of get where I'm coming from.
We'll get there.
So, yeah, I know. But I think it's a great signing, like Scott said. To me, the Padres went from being a laughing stock in the league to having Jake Peavy being just the only diamond in the rough there to now actually having a really great young core. Obviously, a lot of money wrapped up there, but like you said, they're making all the right moves. They're trying to be competitive. And I think for a San Diego fan base that really does not have much to cheer about, that is great for them.
Oh, yeah. Jake Peavy, also a spectacular name drop right there.
Absolutely. Well done. Only person who owned the Padres for years.
I will say, though, with this, like, I always agree there is a lot of concern with contracts this long, no matter who it is, just because it's a lot of money. Injury problems could really plague him. If after year 31, like, he still has, what, 5 years left, he might not be the same player. And I guess at that point, you're paying him for what he has done for your city rather than what he's going to be. Mm-hmm. And you also have inflation with the MLB. I'm sure contracts get bigger. But, yeah. It's definitely interesting. And like you said, Dodgers, I mean, yeah, they got Bauer. Like, they win the World Series and get the Cy Young winner. That's absurd. And then they're going to have David Price, who's going to hopefully opt in this season. We'll see what happens. But I definitely just feel like it's the Dodgers' game to lose.
Yeah. That's really what it's going to be, coming off the World Series and then adding the pieces they've already brought in. Like, you have to favor the Dodgers at this point. Yeah, the one thing I will say with the contracts is we're seeing more and more of this. Like, we've always seen baseball able to offer these larger year contracts just because there's no cap. But we're starting to see Machado, Harper, now Tatis. They're getting these massive, massive deals for long years. The thing I want to say about Tatis in comparison to, say, like, you know, our Phillies Bryce Harper is that you're giving it to Tatis at the beginning of his career. You're letting him get the time to really earn all this, whereas Bryce – we all expected him to be, you know, MVP caliber the second he touched the field in Philly, because he had to be at the end of that contract. That's not why you're paying him. You're paying him for the front half. Whereas Tatis, if he stays that full 14 years, those are going to be 14 fun years for the Padres. So that's where he is. You know, the MLB cover athlete for the show, runner up for MVP, if I'm not mistaken. That dude, a very, very bright future in the MLB. Another guy staying on his squad would be Brett Gardner of the Yankees. I was on Twitter, saw a lot of Yankees fan happy about this. Not quite as big of a name as Tatis, but more of a culture guy. And then Corey Kluber came out and said, look, we're here to prove that the pitching rotation is more than just Gerrit Cole. The real question here is, are the Yankees the favorite in the AL? That has to be the big question. They're always, you know, a favorite, but are they the favorite?
I grimace at that because my gut reaction is to say no, but like, also, who would really give them? I think they could easily win the AL East, right? I mean, that seems like a pretty reasonable assumption. I mean, in the West, you have the Astros, but the Astros are like kind of a little bit on the decline. I'm not saying they'll be bad, but a little iffy. Maybe the Angels have that like awesome season we've been kind of hoping for, but I don't think so. The White Sox are young, but that's interesting. I don't know. Like, honestly, maybe it's because I'm stuck in the East Coast. I just have that mindset, like, Yankees win everything until, like, the ALCS, and they just blow it. But the Rays are going to suck this year after, I would assume, because Snell's gone, they're kind of not paying people. The Indians are kind of the same way. The White Sox maybe will give them a challenge, but Yankees, yeah, not the dynasty's back, but like, they're scary again.
Scott, any differing thoughts there? Are the Yankees the favorite?
I was in the same mindset. Like, when I wanted you guys to go first, because I'm thinking, like, I want to say no, that the Yankees aren't the favorite, but you start thinking about, like, well, the Rays went to the World Series out of the AL last year. They lost Snell. That's a big loss. And you look like Astros lost Springer. Yankees get some additions, but they don't really have any key losses. They re-sign LeMahieu, which is huge. White Sox, I will say, are making a lot of big moves. Blue Jays are making a lot of big moves too, but I just don't see them putting it together.
And they're all young.
They're super young, not a lot of experience. I mean, you had Springer, but if they would have got Springer and Brantley, I would have felt better about their experience. But yeah, I think the White Sox are like the best contenders to the Yankees, but I still have the Yankees over them. It just because the White Sox with the new manager, La Russa, I don't know how that's going to work. Very young, not a lot of postseason experience. I love Jose Abreu and Anderson leading that team, but we just got to see how they put it all together. So yeah.
How unexciting is it as a fan to just assume the World Series is going to be Yankees versus Dodgers?
Yeah, that's bad. Two biggest markets.
Great for the MLB, but
yeah.
We'll see if we get that beautiful upset that we're all praying for. Maybe this is the year our Phillies finally break through with Bryce. Who knows?
They got a tough division of their own, though. They got to break through that.
That actually is a question that I wanted to bring up. We're going to get to the Mets here, actually, right now. This is perfect. Mets added Taijuan Walker. The heartbreaking story in New York is that Tim Tebow did, unfortunately, retire.
Damn it.
Called it a career. The 226 average, an icon for baseball in New York. But unfortunately, he's calling it a career, hanging him up. But yeah, I wanted to bring this up because, you know, Alex and I are both Phillies fans, so it's a little more difficult to think of the division unbiasedly, but also, you know, the Phillies have been awful the last few years, but the NL East has been ramping up for this four, almost five team race to win the division. So for an outside perspective, who do you think looks like the toughest team in that division so far?
Can you say the division again? I know it's Phillies, Mets, is it Marlins?
Phillies, Mets, Marlins, Braves, Nationals.
Braves. That's a tough division. If I was a Philly fan like you two, I'd be really worried about Mets, Braves. Nationals were not very good after their championship year. I know Soto's still a beast. Scherzer and Strasburg are great, but they just all the pieces around them aren't great. I know they lost. I think Adam Eaton's back on the White Sox, which isn't a big loss, but still it's a nice piece to have. So I'd more so worry about the Mets and their pitching staff, and they got some really good hitters. They're trying to sign everyone. They got Lindor now. I think that's going to be competitive. And then the Braves, I mean, they're consistent. They have the same core with Albies, Freeman, Acuña Jr. They re-signed Ozuna, even though there's no DH. So I just think those are the two biggest threats. Honestly, I think I'm going to have the Braves winning that division. Phillies and Mets, you could toss up for two. And it obviously can all change. It's a long season, so Injuries are a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, either way, though, this is going to be one of the most competitive years for that division. It's going to be very, very exciting as a fan of that division. As a Phillies fan, I see us at least still a piece off. We definitely need a second consistent starting pitcher with Nola, and even Nola coming off kind of a rough year.
Yeah.
We're close. It's as close as we've been since signing Bryce, which is really nice. But at the end of the day, like I said before, Bryce is on a timetable despite being on our team for a very long time. So Philly's got to start going. Little more for the MLB. First reports for COVID came back. Only 9 players and 4 staff members tested positive. 0.3% of the league. So very good so far in that front, trying to keep everything safe, of course. But Rockies' Ian Desmond just came out and said he will forego a second straight season. Does anybody expect to see Ian Desmond play baseball ever again?
Maybe. I mean, he also plays in the Rockies, and that's just that in itself is a curse. So I don't blame him for being like, do I play for a team who's going to be the bottom of their division, the bottom of the league, or do I stay at home with my family and, you know, just stay healthy? So I don't mind it. I understand. There's definitely – it would be interesting to see if he's on like a contender team and him be like, oh, I'm going to stop playing, but it's the Rockies. Like, eh.
It's definitely interesting. Cause like I made a joke last year when David Price, when it was, I think we recorded our podcast, I think after game 5. And I said, should David Price like opt back into the Dodgers right now? So if they do win, maybe he gets a ring and like, he can just maybe pitch one inning of relief, like not do much, but that'll be his stats. And like that was a contender and a guy that opted out, and I think he's going to be in this year. With Desmond, yeah, I actually like really like him. I like that he's so versatile. He can play first base. He can just fast enough that he can play outfield. He's a big body guy. But yeah, I just found it weird when I saw that come out. I'm like, I can't be mad at him because obviously he's opting out to be with family and because of COVID concerns. But it's just like, it's sad. I want to see him play. And if I was a Rocky fan, I think I'd be a little bit more butthurt than just a casual fan of baseball. So,
yeah, I agree. Especially, you know, the Rockies, there's very little to be excited for when it comes to baseball for Colorado. Unfortunate we won't see Ian Desmond. The other thought for me was like Ian Desmond could have been one of those players that if the Rockies got to this point that they have of starting to maybe blow up their roster a little bit, he could have kept getting moved to contending teams. So this would have been that portion of his career that he maybe is now missing out on. But either way, we'll see what happens next year. Hopefully by next year, COVID is a much less of a concern.
It better be at this point. It's been a year. It's been a literal year.
Hey man, it's not that bad. No, I'm just kidding. It's awful. It's don't get COVID. Wear a mask.
Well, it's because you have immunity, or you're gonna have immunity in like a week.
Like I said, get your free batch of COVID, and 90-day immunity comes free.
Don't actually do that. But
don't do it. This is all sarcasm, everybody. Please accept that.
I'm just butthurt that Robbie's gonna be immune before I am.
This is my dawning of my superpower. If anybody's curious, I'm a COVID man. That's what we got for the MLB. Pitchers and catchers reporting. So spring training going to start up soon. Moving into the NFL, again, slow off season so far, hasn't really kicked in the gear yet. There's really only one story we're going to talk about, and there's one that my usual co-host is, I don't even know what his feelings are on this, to be completely honest. That's why we're here, guys. So let's dive right into it. Carson Wentz, we mentioned a few weeks back that he was going to be aggressively offered in trade scenarios. He has finally been dealt to Frank Reich and the Colts. He will be their starting quarterback. He was traded for two conditional picks. So I'm gonna run down how the 2022 second round pick would turn into a first round pick. So there are two scenarios in which that happens. Number one is if Carson Wentz plays 75% of the season, the second round pick becomes a first round pick. So doable if he can stay healthy. The second option is if he plays 70% of the snaps and the Colts make the playoffs. So there's that world where he doesn't play the last 2 weeks and their backup Nick Foles goes and wins them a Super Bowl. And the Eagles still get their first pick. So knowing that, but in theory, you got a second and a third round pick. What are your thoughts on this Carson Wentz trade, Alex?
Don't even fucking humor me for a hot second about that. I have my speech ready to go. Here it goes. So the Eagles, my Philadelphia Eagles, who I've been a fan of since I was probably 4 years old, decided to fire the coach who gave him a Super Bowl in hopes of keeping their franchise quarterback. Then decided to jettison said franchise quarterback for basically a box of saltine crackers with the conditional pick that, hey, maybe one of the saltine crackers would come two boxes. I am not happy. I am distraught. Look, there was what I thought this offseason was going to come down to was you make a choice. Do you keep Wentz for the long term or at least give him another shot? Or do you get rid of him, keep Peterson, kind of run it back? They managed to blow away my low, low expectations to them and decided to do both of them and really get a fresh start, I guess. Jalen Hurts currently is a starting quarterback. I don't mind that. They're going to bring in competition for QB camp. I swear if it's Nick Foles, I'm going to have an aneurysm. And I know, Scott, like being a Bears fan, you definitely love him a little bit. I love Nick Foles more than any other human because he brought me my first Super Bowl. But I swear if I have to deal with another season of Nick Foles coming in to try and lead us, I'm going to be a little bit upset. Now, look, we'll see. We have so many problems this year. We ate $30 million in dead cap, which is what I was getting at earlier when talking about baseball. I'm distraught. I'm disheveled. We traded like five picks to draft him. Obviously, that's sunk cost now, but getting not even a first-round pick out of it. Oh, I'm in so much pain thinking about it. I don't know. This year is going to be a rebuild year. Something, something. Devonta Smith. I don't know. I hate everything, basically, is the general gist of this speech.
That sixth pick is really the lone bright spot in this what's going to be a wasteland of an offseason.
And you know what, Robbie? We'll probably pick the best player in the draft, and he'll inexplicably be the biggest bust of the draft, like just with our luck.
He doesn't play his first year. That seems to be a trend in Philly sports. You know, Joe Simmons. I don't think Lane Johnson played a lot of his rookie year.
I don't like you. Like, please leave this call. No, thanks. Don't even humor me.
I want to shift this over to you, Scott, because the Bears were another team that were in contention for Carson Wentz, potentially. Seeing what the Colts moved for him, obviously we don't really know what the Bears would have offered, but had that been all you had to give up for him, Would you have wanted Carson Wentz?
No. my happiest thing, honestly, that's actually not a terrible trade, but my happiest thing about this trade was that the Bears weren't involved. I do like Carson. I feel like he gets a little bit of a bad rep, and I think he has a lot of potential. I mean, a couple years ago, he was an MVP caliber player and was a contender for the MVP award. And it wasn't like 7 years ago. It was like three, maybe. And so it's not long ago. And I mean, you look at his roster sometimes during the season, his receivers were like practice squad Hall of Famers. I mean, like no one we knew. I mean, Travis Fulgham comes out, has a huge game randomly. No one knew him before this year. Yeah. Alshon's been out a lot this year, a lot of drops. Jordan Matthews the past couple seasons. I know he's not on the – I don't think he's on the Eagles anymore.
No, not but anymore.
But ton of drops in his career did not help Carson out a lot. But, yeah, so I'm really happy the Bears didn't get him. One thing, because I don't think having him over Mitch would be that big a difference, especially because we don't have an offensive line or anyone other than Allen Robinson who we might lose. So, like, if we get Wentz and we don't have anything around him, that's not going to be good. So I'm really like, it just wouldn't make sense to go and give up picks for nothing on the field. I do feel bad for the Eagles, especially after the Rams Lions trade, just because the Lions got so much in that trade. One, you get Jared Goff, who's not a terrible quarterback. I don't love him, but he's not that bad. And you get a bunch of picks. And so then I'm like, when the Eagles are talking about getting rid of Wentz, there's like, they can't expect to get close to that, but maybe since that was so many picks in that, maybe they can sneak out one or two, like one first round, maybe a second round. And then they get a second and a third, obviously to the conditions included, but I do feel bad for the Eagles. I don't think Hurts is the answer. I'm curious to see. Yeah. I'm curious to see with six, if they go receiver or if they try to get a quarterback in that first round. I really don't know.
Yeah, I guess going off of that, I could definitely see them actually drafting a quarterback. Like maybe Zach Wilson out of BYU is sort of the name I've heard. I don't know how I'd feel about Justin Fields, but that's another potential option. A little bit, I wouldn't feel as good about that one. I mean, Devonta Smith is who I would be like, yeah, that's a good pick. Or even Micah Parsons out of Penn State as a linebacker, because they really do need linebacking help. Nathan Gary is not the answer, to say the least. I'm so distraught about it, because, you know, coming off of Super Bowl 3-4 years ago, it was magical, you know, and here we are, like, even after two playoff runs the past 2 years before this, like, and even this year having a slight chance, it's tough. But I have fully accepted rebuild mode. We've gotten rid of DeSean Jackson, thank God, because he has done nothing in his 2 years there. So that was the biggest waste of my time in the world and biggest nostalgia trip in the process.
Won you games against the Giants.
Yeah, and that was great in 2010. But, like, bringing him back and being like, okay, he'll do that again, then playing three total games, like, just send him into the streets. I don't want him anymore. Yeah, get him off our roster.
The Eagles' mess at wide receiver is much more important than figuring out if you need to pressure Jalen Hurts with another quarterback, because at the end of the day, nobody's going to look good if Travis Fulgham's the best receiver you're throwing to. And Fulgham came on this year. He had a pretty good year when he needed to, but at the end of the day, you want him at best as your second or third receiver. So if you can get Devonta Smith with six, that I think is the ideal pick, unless that O-lineman falls to you, that'd be probably the ideal. But
I think the only thing I will say about this to finish this conversation is, even though the trade was so bad in terms of what they got back, I mean, not to say that Carson Wentz had incredible value, but if they had done something like what the Lions and Rams did, where they swapped picks and also swapped QBs, if we got a second round pick, a third round pick, and Jacoby Brissett, I would have thrown myself at the nearest window. That honestly would have been worse somehow, and I just can't fathom why.
Hey, man, we're big Jacoby Brissett fans here.
I am, but I don't want him. He's not the answer.
That's fair. You don't need a guy like that if you have Hurts.
I think this what the Eagles have done, and I don't want to like rub dirt into the wound here.
Nah, it's fine. Go for it.
Like obviously you said, like they won a Super Bowl a couple years ago, and this is one of the biggest declines I have ever seen. I'm not saying they should be contenders or in the Super Bowl every year, but they go from Super Bowl a couple playoff appearances to being part of the NFC East that they can't get out of, which is just crazy not to win that. Like, I think their draft picks, their free agent signings, everything they've done since that Super Bowl has been really bad. Like, you look at the Rams, who lost to the Patriots. I mean, they're not great. They had a lot of injury problems in the playoffs this year with Goff and Donald. But they, you know, they made moves. Now they have Stafford, they have Darnold, they have Ramsey. Like, they should be a team in the NFC to watch. And then, I mean, the Patriots don't count because Brady left. But, like, you look at all these Super Bowl teams. The Chiefs went back to the Super Bowl. They lost, but they went back after winning. The Eagles, just what they're doing is kind of crazy to think about.
I'll play devil's advocate very quickly and say that the free agent signings that the Eagles have done weren't terrible signings. A lot of times it was either they get injured. We have some of the worst injury luck in the world, and that's not to be biased. It's just, it seems like every year it's 20 plus people on IR. And some of the contracts have been very iffy, but our drafting is disgustingly bad, and it has been for a decade. So to me, they need to fix that with this draft. And yeah, it's going to be a fun, when does it start? 7 months. Yes. 7 months of off-season prep. So can't wait.
I'm gonna throw one curveball to you guys.
Please don't.
Other than the concept of them paying essentially for Carson Wentz this year, I think the Eagles won the trade. I don't think Carson Wentz is as bad as people give him credit for, but he, in my opinion, had a meteoric sink like Russell Westbrook did, in the sense of his value just plummeted. Russell Westbrook, the only reason we saw him get traded was because the Wizards didn't know what they were going to get out of John Wall. And they said, cool, we know what we're going to get out of Russell Westbrook. The only thing exchanged besides those players' contracts was a second round draft pick. It's a very similar thing here, in my opinion. Carson Wentz's value dropped. He got hurt after that MVP season. He got, you know, last year was a bad sample size because the Eagles were basically playing high school offensive linemen. But those circumstances just brought him down. So I think the Colts got a steal, obviously. But I also think the Eagles got more than they were ever going to get from another team. Like you mentioned, Scott, that you didn't want him as a Bears fan. And clearly, in theory, this was the best offer that the Eagles received. I think I saw this as close to a win as Eagles fans were going to get, because they were gonna get mad no matter where and what for Carson Wentz got traded. And I think we all know that.
I will say, like, I was happy we didn't get Wentz, but that's not because I don't think Wentz is a good quarterback. It's because I don't think the Bears have the infrastructure to bring him on and win. And I also, knowing our front office, if we were to get him, we would probably give up our 3 first-round picks and – I don't know. We'll give him something else that's ridiculously good. Like, maybe I'm trying to think of a decent player like that we would trade. But regardless, we'd give away like too much. And I'd be like, great. Now we got Wentz, who might be, it probably is an improvement on Trubisky. And I'm actually a pretty big fan of Trubisky, but might be an improvement on Trubisky. But if we give away too much that we can't build around Wentz, it's just not worth it. So that's why I wasn't really, I actually do like Wentz on the Colts. If we want to talk about the Colts side, you know, went 11-5 against last season with Rivers, who was not terrible. A lot of ground game and a lot of defense. I mean, Buckner and Leonard are beasts on that end. I think they're going to have 3 really good running backs next year, because Marlon Mack was injured all year. Mm-hmm. Hines is a great pass catcher, and he just has explosive plays, like 3 a game. And Jonathan Taylor, the first rounder. I'm curious what they're going to do with receivers and tight ends. They did pretty well, but yeah, I honestly think Wentz can actually really help them. And 11-5, getting a former almost MVP, like an MVP candidate, like, and he's not old or past his prime. Like, he's, this could be a good bounce back revenge tour for Carson Wentz. We'll see.
I agree. Alex, as the leading viewer of Carson Wentz, how much better do you think he is going to make this Colts team than Phillip Rivers did?
It's tough to say, because the Colts are honestly a good quarterback away from being like a legitimate Super Bowl contender. And Carson Wentz, like you guys alluded to, he has the potential to be that missing piece. And with Frank Reich and other pieces they have around him, yeah, I think he's in the best system possible. Now, as a salty Eagles fan, I would love if Carson Wentz did nothing but absolutely collapse the Colts, because, you know, I'm spiteful. That's how I am. I don't know. We talked about this earlier, though, and I hate the fact that Carson Wentz just seemed like he wasn't willing to compete, like, against Jalen Hurts for the job. Like, this guy was a second overall pick, would have been the MVP if he didn't get hurt with like 3-4 games left in his Super Bowl season, but it just seemed like he wasn't, he never like really faced stiff competition. You know, I'm sure it was the best player in North Dakota, was the best player in D1 AA football, and then comes to the NFL, was the best player in the Eagles, watches his backup win a Super Bowl, and then kind of it sort of all falls apart there. Like, mental health in sports is something super big, and I'm not trying to say like Carson Wentz is soft, he should never even think about like other things like that or external factors. So you obviously do, that's how a normal person functions, but to me it just seemed like he not gave up but just didn't rise to the occasion when the pressure is put on him of an internal kind of force. So
he kind of reminds me in a little bit of like, I want to say Cutler attitude, where obviously Wentz always looks like he's trying. He looks like he's upset when he throws a pick, unlike Cutler, who's like, ah, guess we don't have practice tomorrow. Like, maybe I'll go to the casino. Like, you don't know what he does in his free time. But with Wentz, like, there are some absolute goose eggs that he just threw, and you're like, he'd have some amazing plays, and then he'd have some where it was just, this guy was an MVP candidate. This guy, his team won a Super Bowl. Like, he doesn't look like he belongs throwing a ball. And it's just, for me, it's consistency. I don't know if he was just mentally checked out. Like, I think maybe the competition did that to him. Maybe just all the, I mean, Philadelphia is it's a tough fan base. And if he gave up on it, it's hard to get back in their good graces. So I think we'll see how he does in Indianapolis. If things go bad, I feel like they're going to go bad and just stay bad. It's going to really just be how he starts his first couple of games.
Yeah, this is his last chance, basically. Like, if it goes bad in Indy, you're out, because you gave him his OC. You give him all these weapons. Like, it's on you, or get the hell out.
You mentioned he throws really nice passes. He throws some goose eggs. It's the same, essentially, with how his seasons go. It's, you can either get a really great season, or you can get what we saw last year. And we're really about to see how much last year's Eagles team affected Carson Wentz. You know, obviously, the long offseason still ahead of us, but first full year in Indianapolis – I don't think anyone's rooting against Carson Wentz. Maybe some Eagles fans. Who knows?
I'm not rooting against him. I wish him the best of luck.
Love that. Love that. At the end of the day, the man was an awesome part of what was the only Super Bowl team.
100%.
Not a whole lot going on around the league otherwise. You mentioned DeSean Jackson got released. Pretty much the only thing going on is teams releasing some big salary options, some older players to clear up some room. The Panthers released Trey Boston among players. They're trying to clear up some space to go after Deshaun Watson if it becomes possible. The Packers just released Rick Wagner and Christian Kirksey. Just making some moves, clearing up some cap space. You know, a couple teams also still looking to go after J.J. Watt, excuse me. The Packers were a team that we had mentioned before.
TJ's nobody's getting now.
TJ, I can promise you that right now. But yeah, so teams really just gearing up at this point for the offseason. We'll have more hopefully next week, but for now, really just the Wentz news was the big thing there. And then before we get into the NBA quick, I just want to mention that the three-seeded Michigan Wolverines did just defeat the four-seeded Ohio State Buckeyes in college basketball. It was the biggest matchup of the day. The only other ranked team that had been playing was Houston, who lost earlier in the week, but they were clowning whoever they were playing today. So just wanted to give Michigan a shout out. Huge, huge win for them in attempts to A, be a number one seed come tournament time, and B, be the top seed in the Big Ten tournament. Because if they win the Big Ten tournament, I guarantee they're going to be a number one seed in March Madness. And we'll obviously also be setting up some betting odds for March Madness once it comes a little closer. We'll have some fun with that. But now we are going to move into the NBA. We're going to actually kind of start backwards. We're going to start with the game that finished last yesterday. That was Golden State versus the Hornets, and man, was that an exciting finish. For anybody who knows Draymond Green and his lovely antics, he was back at it again. 9 seconds left in the game. So let me paint this picture a little wider, actually. There was a play with a few seconds, last minute of the game. There's a jump ball. The Warriors are trying to call a timeout. They don't get a timeout. Next possession, two possessions later, whatever it was, there's another situation like that, but the refs give the Hornets their timeout. This infuriates Draymond Green to the point of it sounded like he was cussing out players on the other team. He was given a technical foul, usually how those things go. Immediately starts turning that profanity to the refs, immediately is dealt his second technical foul. And in the NBA, if you record two technical fouls, it is an automatic ejection. So with 9 seconds left, Draymond Green was ejected from the game. And lo and behold, Terry Rozier, who is just going nuts this season in these past few games, hits a buzzer beater. You can see just the distraught faces of the Warriors on the bench. Steve Kerr kicked the basketball afterwards. I think somebody slammed their towel down right as the shot went down. It was a crazy scene. First of all, it's just, who wants to make something of all this? What happened? You know, this is kind of classic Draymond Green at this point.
I mean, I can talk a little bit. I saw this earlier, and I love, because I noticed Kirk, he was going to, like, boot the ball, and I think he held back a little bit, but, like, he was very angry. I saw the towel, it looked like clipboards. They were all just so distraught, and I think the craziest thing is that this was a game. Like, the fact that it was close, I mean, Rozier did play great. I think he almost had 40 points. I think it was about 36.
30. Yeah, he dropped 20 in the fourth.
Yeah, and he had to make those. He had to make – with the technical, which was the stupidest thing ever, because then that gave them the free throws and the ball. So the free throws tied it. The ball, the game – I mean, the shot would have tied it, but now it won it. So I love it because it's Draymond being Draymond, and in this case it screwed him over. And I know Robbie loves it too, because he made a presentation in college about why everyone hates Draymond. And so, so yeah, what do you guys think about this?
I think, and Robbie, this is, you know, you've played with me for a number of years. You know that I'm very level-headed when I play basketball. I'm very calm no matter how often people hang on me or foul me when I'm playing in the post.
Slamming your head on the ground.
Yes, of course. But so, like, I'm very good at controlling my emotions in sports. With that being said, though, I know Draymond's an absolute hothead, but he had every reason to be pissed off at the world. Between, yeah, you said it before, they had, like, kind of a weird timeout call on the jump ball. The Hornets possessed the ball, but not for very long, and they got the timeout in. Yeah, I understand why he's really pissed off. You do have to try and control your emotions in that moment. I mean, one technical, like, you kind of have to just stop and be like, okay, it's one free throw. They could win the game still, and, you know, if Terry Rozier still exists, they probably would have. But, oh, my God, it's – you know for a fact that'll drive any teammate crazy when, you know, you do something kind of emotionally charged in a basketball game. At the same time, though, I can't blame anyone, even Steve Kerr, who – played with Jordan, had to be level-headed with how much of a hothead Jordan could be at times. Like, he was pissed off, and I don't blame anyone in the Warriors for being upset by all those calls, and it sucks. At the same time, though, you just have to be conscious of that, because that's kind of how basketball is and any sport in general.
Yeah, I agree. Kerr said after the game he didn't think Draymond should have gone that far. He went a little too far, but in the heat of the moment, Kerr didn't really get to react to it. You know, there were 9 seconds left in the game. He had to worry about getting Juan Toscano into the game as Green's replacement. High emotion moment. These happen in sports, as we mentioned, happen in basketball a lot. You know, there's a time I'm remembering when I got called for a travel by a ref. There was two defenders in between the ref and the entire other half of the court. He still calls me for a travel, and I'm like, how the hell did you see my feet? But you always got to keep emotions in check. I don't think that – I think this is one of those scenarios where Draymond is almost justified, because, God, when does this happen? Like, even him, when does this happen? But at the end of the day, you got to play the hand you're dealt. Draymond would have been a guy you would love to have trying to contest that Rozier shot. Fortunately, wasn't able to be in the game. Warriors still the 8th seed in the playoffs right now, though. Hornets, I believe they are 7 at the moment. And if, you know, we went back to 10 years ago when the division winners won the top 3 seeds, the Hornets would be hosting a playoff series. So that'd be kind of funny.
That'd be a massacre.
It'd be spectacular, because I can only imagine they'd get to play the Heat in the first round.
That 6th seed would be, yeah. Because, oh, my God, especially with the Heat having a slow start. Yeah, they'd probably get the 6th or 5th seed, and they just steamroll for the Hornets at home.
So let's go right into the talk about the Heat, actually, as there was a finals rematch yesterday between the Lakers and the Heat. A very exciting game. If anyone got to watch, the Heat ended up winning 96-94. As I tweeted about on our account, Duncan Robinson had a double-double, proving he's more than just a shooter, 10 rebounds. Jimmy had another spectacular game, not a fourth consecutive triple-double, unfortunately, but 25 points, 8 boards, 5 assists. Very good game. And Bam really showed up, had a huge block on LeBron at the end of the game. But either way, the Heat turned the ball over on the last possession. LeBron gets Caruso a relatively open look, and it was one of the ugliest game-winning attempts I've ever seen. The only thing that really matters for the Lakers is how negatively impacted are they by Davis being out, now Schroeder being out. Injuries are starting to pile up for this team.
God, I was hoping Caruso was going to make that, because I was going to give you so much shit today, so much grief. It would have been unbelievable. But you know, it's funny, because the Lakers really did look incomplete without Davis there last night. And I, you know, obviously Anthony Davis is a top 10 player in the NBA, but having like Kyle Kuzma have to be your second option, that's something else to say the least.
He played well though.
He did. That's what's baffling, because everyone gives Kyle Kuzma a ton of shit, but he's actually, for the $1 million he is paid a year, he is quite a good player to have on the court.
Yes.
I am curious to see how they do. What concerns me though is I think they're going to rush AD back, and you're going to have the same situation where I don't think AD has torn his Achilles yet. I think he has a calf injury that is one bad move away from turning into Kevin Durant's Achilles injury. I think it's what's 100% going to happen.
That would be unfortunate. Can they maintain their top three status in the West without Anthony Davis for the foreseeable future?
How long is he out? 4 weeks right now?
At least essentially one more month.
I think with LeBron and their core, I still think they could keep up a top three seed. It's going to get tough though with the Jazz, obviously, or super hot. Clippers, though, I think are kind of going to fall in line with being the three seed in the West, and I think the Lakers could fit in two or three. So,
Scott, I know you're a little more critical of LeBron James than me or Alex, specifically me.
Good man.
What do you think about the Lakers' chances to maintain their top three, four status with Davis gone?
I think they're without a doubt going to have the three or four. I mean, you look at the Western Conference right now, the fifth seed's the Trailblazers, the sixth is the Spurs. The only team I see past them right now is the fourth seed at the Suns. I mean, the Lakers, even without AD, LeBron in that core can beat the Trailblazers, Spurs. Nuggets are seventh seed right now. They might move up, but I see the Lakers right now bouncing between three and four, and nothing lower.
Yeah, I think they may actually fall below Phoenix. LeBron is spectacular, but at the end of the day, you cannot expect him to do this every year where he has nobody else to help him and continue to win games.
He's also going to be doing those rest days, and when he's out, it's going to be him and AD gone, and I mean, that's like
a bad Lakers team.
Yeah, that's not great. Those are pretty much going to be forfeits that they hope to, you know, win one or two of those, but it's going to be fun to see that.
We've all seen the memes of those random Lakers starting lineups from back in the day. It'll be something like that again. KCP still here though. So,
wow.
Yes. Okay. So while we're on the Heat and the Lakers, we're going to cut to the next. So the jersey I'm wearing today is a DeMarcus Cousins. Going to bring that up because, as mentioned a few days ago, he is going to get released by Houston in the coming days. And the top two candidates to sign him have been the front runners are the LA Lakers. And right behind them would be the Miami Heat. First, who benefits more from DeMarcus Cousins? And second, is this a big enough signing for either team to take them over any respective home?
Of those two teams, you're saying? Lakers would benefit. Lakers would benefit 100% more than the Heat, because the Heat do have a little bit of depth in the center position. The team that benefits the most, though, would be the Cleveland Cavaliers, and they keep Andre Drummond, and they run the five big man offensive set and pass the ball over top of everyone and dunk it in every possession. There's no way they can lose. Just
almost
saying.
Like you played big man in your career, and you
five big men. It can't lose.
Larry Nance at the point. I feel like if you have all five of those big men, you would win the rebounding and possession battle. I mean, if you just play lockdown defense, you're solid.
God, imagine the turnovers to assist ratio, though.
It wouldn't be a lot of assists. It'd be a lot of 6 foot shots. Oh my God. Can you imagine trying to spread the floor with like four guys just in the paint?
I would love it. You could play like a box, like
Kevin Love. It'll be four guys in the paint and Love in the corner. That's all it will be. I agree. I think the Lakers, obviously, one, you get to rest AD and make sure he is fully healthy. You also have a guy that came off an Achilles injury, so he kind of understands what AD is going through. Because obviously I do see if they rush him back, it's going to be very KD-like, where if he gets hurt, it's like, great. Like, we saw this happen, and you guys did it again. He also played for the Lakers, I think, for a year.
He was there last year, just got hurt.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if he got released, but he has a ring from them, so congrats.
I also think that with Boogie, he's trying – like, I think the reason the Rockets are releasing him is not because they don't like him, not like his contract's bad. It's because they want to go with Wood, and they want to give Boogie – they gave him a chance with the Houston, and it worked great. He performed well, but since they're not going to give him that bigger role, they want what's best for him. And I think that's awesome for the Rockets. They're doing the right thing. Honestly, the Heat don't really need him. They have depth. I saw the Raptors as a potential third option. I think with Aaron Baines as a center, I think Boogie's an improvement. They already
No, Aaron Bane slander. That is the one thing I refuse to accept in this podcast.
Aaron Baines is the only center that I see in the paint just taking charges. Like, he's like every other big man is trying to go up, get a block, get out of the way. He's just like him and Lowry just take charges for days. It's amazing.
Yeah. Him and Ilyasova, the only centers I've ever seen try and take charges and absolutely get detonated on by like Embiid or like AD constantly.
Okay, so then I won't slander Baines, but I think Boogie as the starter there, you have Boucher, who's been great off the bench, who gets, let's say, 25 minutes. If you have Boogie getting anywhere from 23 to 30 minutes, which is probably, like, just for health precautions, where he should be at right now, I think he could really help that team. And also, they don't need him to be, like, the number two scoring option. I mean, they got Lowry, Van Vliet, and Siakam. It's three. If any of them are out or they need some more paint presence, I think Boogie's a great option. I think the Raptors are actually probably could benefit the most, but out of the Heat and Lakers, I think without doubt the Lakers could really use him.
Yeah, I have been very adamant about how little value I see in the current form of Marc Gasol. So I think Boogie as their starting center would be just an awesome upgrade. I like him in Toronto too. I am not afraid to slander Aaron Baines at this point. He has had horrendous in Toronto.
How dare you? That man is an all-star. Don't you even start with me.
He outlasted Alex Len.
Yeah, he outlasted Alex Len of all people.
Oh my God. But yeah, you know, they cut Len earlier in the year. They're in need of an extra big man. I like the lineups with Boucher and Siakam, but you're very clearly not as capable of a rebounding team. And with Boogie's ability to spread the floor, I like Toronto. I think it's going to be LA. That's why I only mentioned LA and Miami, because I really do think it's going to be one of those two teams. This is also going to sound weird, but I would rather the Heat sign DeMarcus Cousins than Andre Drummond. He just fills more of the gaps that the Heat have at this point.
I mean, also, you already have an Andre Drummond type with Bam. Like, you have a guy that rebounds and is dominant in the paint and probably does it better than Drummond. Why not get a guy that can be complimentary towards that?
Exactly.
With Boogie, who can also stretch the floor, be a little bit more of an offensive presence. But, like, I just feel like having Bam and Drummond is just too many of the same things.
No need. Exactly. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. It fills the rebounding gap, which is we're one of the worst rebounding teams in basketball right now, but you can't really play both of them at the same time. So at that point, you're like, did we just sign Andre Drummond to be our sixth man? I don't think that's a scenario he'd want to even get into. So I'd be very surprised if that happened. I wouldn't be mad if he got Boogie, but I expect him to go to LA. But the way that whole scenario went down actually was, I don't know if anyone noticed, but about a week before his release, they guaranteed his entire contract for this year. And then they released him, very much saying, look, we have no ill will towards you. This is just not the way we want to go. And we believe you deserve to be on a contending team at this point in your career. So, you know, hats off to both those organizations, especially after the turmoil that was the James Harden mess. Good to see Houston trying to benefit their players in whatever way they can. Okay, so those are the first three bullet points I got here. A little bit more... some awesome moments happened actually on the same day this past week. Two players went for 50 points in the same day. I'm going to start with your Joel Embiid. I watched this whole game. One of the most spectacular individual performances I've seen in a very long time. 50 points for Joel Embiid, 17 rebounds, 4 blocks. Just throw that one out there. You know, he's a name that doesn't get recognized for Defensive Player of the Year when he very much should. Joel Embiid is playing on another level this season. There is no more comparing Embiid to Jokic. It is Embiid has become the front runner for the MVP, in my opinion. He has become the most dominant center we've seen maybe since Shaq, definitely since Dwight. The sky is the absolute limit for this Philadelphia team. We don't talk about them as much as we should, despite having a Sixers fan on crew. Man, somebody put this Sixers season in perspective so far and how dominant Joel Embiid's stretch has been.
I mean, you said it yourself. That's why I don't talk about it a lot. I'm really excited to see what the season brings. This roster is significantly better than last year. They finally addressed the issue of shooting. Embiid really hit like his stretch that he needed to. Like, what the big problem was, and this is why people really got on Embiid's case the past 2 years. One, the stamina. But the other was in playoff time and crunch time, he'd be the one with the ball. And he'd obviously get double or triple team. They really didn't have anyone else who could score. Like Ben Simmons still shooting is a little bit of an issue for him, even despite the fact he dropped 40 the other day too. Yeah, that's our side note. But now with Curry, with Green, with Tobias really getting into his own, and even with Ben Simmons, who can still score, like there's a lot you can do, a lot of options, and it puts a little bit less pressure on Embiid, and he can kind of just go in and be as dominant as he usually is. With that being said, though, this was against the Bulls. Embiid has a tendency to drop insane numbers against some pretty crummy teams. And Wendell Carter, as much as you love him, a little bit undersized for a center. So, especially against a man like Embiid, who is an absolute freak. But
yeah, how did that feel seeing that guy drop 50 on your boys?
Hey, if they covered the spread, I won money.
That's all that matters.
A secret Bulls thing that one of my co-podcasters does is whenever the Bulls are underdogs, so like, you know, +6, +7, just bet a little money on it. They've been hitting that for some reason a lot more. Now, if we're projected to win, we don't touch it because that's probably not going to happen. But just betting the spread. I was thrilled they covered the spread. I mean, Embiid destroying. We have a pretty bad defensive team. That's why we hit a lot of overs. We can score, and we kept that game fun, but. Yeah, I'm not shocked Embiid destroying us in that one.
Yeah, I am very high on Joel Embiid this year, as I am proclaiming. So we're going to be talking, I understand your point, Alex, because I didn't want to talk about the Heat a lot last year because I was just like, let's leave it on the floor. When you know your team's contending, you let them do the talking for you. So we'll talk about the Sixers when necessary and important. But at the moment, we're just going to sit here and enjoy this spectacular brand of basketball that they're playing.
Damn right.
I mentioned another player dropped 50 points that same day. That was Jamal Murray. I don't know if this is necessarily a more impressive feat, but it was the first time somebody accomplished this in NBA history. Jamal Murray, the first player in NBA history to score 50 points with zero free throw attempts. As a avid James Harden hater, I love to see that. He was 21 of 25 from the field. That just doesn't really happen anymore. So just a spectacular performance from someone who had kind of come out of the gate slow. This is the guy that Denver needs to have turn around his season for them to start rising in the standings. Is there a chance that he can use this momentum and help Denver get to a point where they could be seen making another run back to the conference finals?
Absolutely. Never count out Denver. They've had such a shit start this year. And I think with a little bit of time and a little bit of working out some chemistry kinks, they're going to be hot. And I think we kind of saw it. Dropping 50 points without shooting a single free throw, that's nuts.
I mean, honestly, I'm not even like, scoring 50 with no free throws is impressive, but the efficiency is insane. 21 for 25, 8 for 10 from three. Like, there's hot and like, you know, heat checks, but the dude was heat checking all day and still making all his shots. I mean, it's absurd. He had 6 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 steals. Like, he filled up the stat sheet for a guard there. I think it's crazy that the Nuggets aren't like having that great a season. And I'm really happy for Murray here because we talked about Bubble Murray and that awesome legendary Jazz Murray versus Mitchell series. And we really like, he's actually regressed a lot this year. And a lot of announcers and commentators were talking about how, you know, this isn't the same. We're never going to get the same Jamal Murray again. And like, this is just a flash that shows you like he can do this. Like, this could be the everyday Jamal Murray. And I don't think he's going to shoot that efficient again, but that's an awesome stat line. Huge night for him and Embiid. I love seeing that from both of them.
Yeah, I completely agree. I have not fully bought into Jamal Murray having the ability to become maybe a superstar, but I always have thought that he's had that clutch factor, that it factor, that you can just get it done when you need to. You can hit big shots, and he proves that more nights than not. So I would not be surprised. To get back to the conference finals is very difficult, especially with how hot a team like Utah is. But, you know, if in the world where they get to not have to face either LA team in the second round, that's the world. That's where it's possible. Either way, though, Denver looking to turn around. And with those 250-point performances, just historic nights in the NBA, or performances on the same night in the NBA, I have two more things here, a player and a team I want to get to. I'm going to talk about the team first. That is the Utah Jazz. They are the best team in the NBA right now, 24-6. They just suffered a tough loss to the Clippers, but either way, playing the best basketball we've seen in Utah since, John Stockton and Karl Malone. End of the day, though, what are the chances this team can actually go to the finals, can actually beat one of these LA teams?
I think they're too young.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they could maybe beat one of the LA teams, but I don't see them winning the West this year.
It's tough. I'm really happy that they had that series with the Nuggets last year, got some like playoff experience. But yeah, it is tough. Like LeBron and AD, like they kind of try to coast through the season and they take those games off. But in the playoff, you're getting them every night at their best. They're making adjustments. And then the Clippers, you know, you saw them last night. They did. I mean, this was the first night, I think, George and Kawhi were back. Maybe second night for George, but they were able to beat the super hot Jazz team. But I mean, they were due for a loss. They're like 19 and out of their last 22, I think. Like they are hot. So losing to the Clippers, and I think they also lost to the Nuggets. Nothing to be ashamed of. Like they're doing great. They're winning at such a high percentage. I really don't know if like you want to like pencil them in as probably making the conference finals, maybe going to the finals, but it's just such a long season, and it's, you can't count out LeBron or this other LA team.
Yeah, my big concern for a team like Utah is their offense is, in my opinion, very simple. It is Donovan Mitchell or Jordan Clarkson, whoever's in the game at the time, you never see them together, is the primary ball handler, shot maker, shot taker. Everybody else just has to hit the shots they make. And so far this year, they have been. And you can even assume that they will continue to do that for the rest of the year. But if the only real thing you have to do to stop this team is put either LeBron James or Kawhi Leonard on Donovan Mitchell, there is very, very little that the Jazz are going to be able to do to counter that. That's the next step they have to take. Their Bohan Bogdanovic needs to turn into somebody who can draw that defender away, that can make sure that matchup never has to happen. And I don't see them needing to waste someone like that on Bogdanovic, even if Bogdanovic is hitting that day.
Caruso is going to be covering Bogdanovic. Like you're not going to need someone elite defensive player just to guard a guy that's going to kind of hang around the 3-point line.
Exactly. But
I do also want to give a shout out to Mike Conley for the Jazz. I mean, he's played really well. I wouldn't say it's just Clarkson and Mitchell handing it off when they're swapping in and out, but I mean, Clarkson's been great. I think it's funny. Like I'm not like huge on Gobert for defensive player of the year. I think he's obviously like their defensive player of the year and he's great. And like, he should be nominated, but like, I'd rather have Embiid or Turner at this rate. I mean, Giannis guards all the positions, LeBron does too. So it's tough, but I do really think this Jazz team is good. I'm excited. I think Quinn Snyder right now is probably going to be coach of the year just based off of this stretch, but you never know if they go cold.
Yeah, that's the big thing is, despite the difference in record, you know, Philly has 10 losses, the top three teams in the West all are single digit at this point. But if you're asking me who I think is going to have more playoff success between Utah and Philly, I'm picking the Sixers, man. That seems more set in stone.
And I don't even know why. Like, I completely agree, but I just feel like the Sixers, I trust more in the playoffs than the Jazz. It could be just conference, too.
It's going to be awesome, though. The East is not as open as it may seem, and the West, obviously, that tight 3-14 race at this point, plus Denver, if they can get back to it. So that's the team I wanted to talk about. Give that shout out to Utah, the player. So we've talked about Joel Embiid as a top MVP candidate. We always talk about LeBron James as a top MVP candidate. And then the hot topic of debate has been, who is that third candidate? There's been talk of Jokic. There's been talk of Steph Curry, but the hottest player in the league right now has to be that point guard in Portland, Dame Dalla D. If you are talking about points in the last 5 seconds of a basketball game, Damian Lillard is not just the most in the current NBA. He averages the most all time in the last 5 seconds of a basketball game. That is, if you need a shot made, he is your guy. He does not miss. He is virtually unguardable. And he has this Portland team at 18-11 as the 5 seed. And way back when this offseason had ended and we were making season predictions, I was said, watch out for Portland as a dark horse to come and make the Western Conference Finals, because this is the best team that Damian Lillard has had around him so far. And he's doing it without his second and third best player, which is the craziest part. So I have to ask, is Dame the third MVP candidate right now?
Yes. Good. Emphatically, yes. Because I, when we did our top 10 NBA players, I put Dame a lot higher than a lot of other people would, because I know that dude will always turn it on when he needs to. And if there's a person I want taking a final shot, as much as I hate him, I'd say Kyrie Irving, but then I would also 100% emphatically say Damian Lillard.
Dame.
I agree. I mean, he's just amazing. And like you said, without his 2 and 3 options, I mean, the Trailblazers have been cursed with injury luck this year. They lost McCollum. They lost, Nurkic? And it's just tough. I mean, they're putting out a roster with Enes Kanter at center. Gary Trent's actually playing pretty well off the bench. Actually, he might be starting now with all the injuries. Yeah, like Dame's just he's doing the most with nothing. So yeah, I think that if they win more and they get a good playoff push and maybe get like a fifth seed, which I'd be shocked, then I think he might be in that conversation. It's just they're not winning, and that's a big thing to talk about.
Oh yeah, well, fifth seed right now, so we'll see. But either way, I think Embiid and LeBron have had better seasons. But you're talking about that third name. Dame has never been an MVP finalist before. I think this really could be the year where he gets in that top three. I'm so high on Damian Lillard. He's probably my favorite player in the league right now. So Duncan Robinson, of course.
James Harden.
Oh, I just love James Harden. Everybody knows
Big
that.
Big fan. You're growing the beard just like him.
Just like him, yeah. I got the red jersey and everything. Oh, no, he plays black now. That's good. All right. So we're going to move on into our betting odds for this week. Alex, you want to throw us some odds for tomorrow, give you our picks for this week?
Of course. And for anyone listening, we're – you know, partnership with Viget. It's fantasy, like Robbie said, sports betting app. Use not real money. You don't have to pay anything for it to win real prizes. But yeah, I thought might as well use our combined knowledge to obviously win a ton of coins. So boys, I'm going to listen to the both of you. So if I lose my entire wallet on Viget, I'm going to be upset and I'm going to have to talk to our sponsors to get some get some coins. But for anyone listening, you can sign up for it, free download app, user code ALLSTARS, join our group, we'll have a blast. All right, so tomorrow our boy Scott, as a you know, a bit of a Chicago fan here, Bulls Rockets. Bulls are +1 right now. Who are you taking? Do you think the Rockets are gonna win it? Basically, it's a pick 'em.
That's
Bulls +1, Rockets -1. What do you got?
My friend always says that the Bulls are plus, you take the spread. But +1 is not much of a spread there. That's pretty much just money line.
Exactly.
God, it's really tough. I think this will be a high scoring game because I don't even know if Wood's back yet. If it's just, yeah, do they still have? I mean, it depends if Wall's sitting this one out. I mean, it could be Oladipo. The Rockets just have so much injuries. I honestly would take the Bulls +1, and that's not even like a homer. Like I make a lot of money off of the Bulls losing. And I love them, but like if they're gonna lose, I also want to profit. So yeah, I really think that I think the Bulls should take that just because probably no Boogie because they're trying to or they're gonna release him. Wood I think is still out, and if it's just Wall and Oladipo, I think that we should have more depth, which is crazy because we don't have much depth, but we should have more than the Rockets. So I'll take the Bulls in that one.
Robbie,
I'm also gonna say the Bulls for mainly the reason of I don't think they're gonna have a real center. The Rockets, DeShaun Tate, the rookie, has been spectacular this year, could guard forwards, but I don't think he can handle big men. Not that Wendell Carter is any much of a physically dominant center, but at the end of the day, like you said, the Bulls will actually be the deeper team than tomorrow. So especially if they're down one or two of those Wall Oladipo backcourt members, I mean, Zach LaVine's just going to torch whoever they put on him. So
yeah,
I would take the Bulls.
And we have enough scoring options where like Kobe, LaVine, I'd even say Laurie can all go off enough. That Young off the bench is pretty solid. So, like, if you only have Wall and Oladipo, yeah, they might lock up two, but we still have enough guys that should be able to get theirs. And I don't know. What do the Rockets do? Put P.J. Tucker back at center? Like, are we going back to that now? I don't know what they're going to do.
All right, well, I have locked that in for the Bulls money line because, you know, +1 really doesn't mean much. So we'll get a little bit of juice out of that.
I'm not saying money line. I'm saying +1.
All right, well, if they lose by one, I won't blame you, I promise.
Okay. Blame me, that's fine.
All right, sure, sounds good to me. All right, another interesting game tomorrow. Trailblazers at Phoenix. Spread is 6.5, so -6.5 Phoenix. Over under 228.5. Either or, pick one or both.
I'm going to take Phoenix. They're playing really good basketball. I think the injuries are really tough for the Trailblazers. But I do think just the Chris Paul, Devin Booker leadership, like Chris Paul's such a vet, and he just gets the best out of everyone he plays with. I just feel like Phoenix is too sound. They'll win. The cover is not great. Like 6.5 is a little bit more than I'd like, but I think that's realistic. And free throws maybe help them push it. Over, under? I mean, Trailblazers like to score a lot. So I do lean over, and I hate being in the under guy, but I think I'm going to take the under.
All right.
I think the pace of play is a little slow. I think the Suns, don't have many possessions. I think they have been locking up defense a little bit more recently. So I'm going to go Suns spread and then the under.
I was actually also going to say the under, which is interesting because, yeah, when you talk about Portland, you usually talk about them scoring lots of points, but I think Phoenix is one of those teams that can do what they, you know, do whatever they can to keep them in check, whatever keeping Damian Lillard in check means or is good for. But if we're talking about the spread, I think I'd take Portland. I think that's going to be a very, very good basketball game. But I think if there's a runaway, I think Portland has the better chance to be the team that runs away with it. So I would say take the Blazers, but definitely look at that under because that's the most enticing of those options.
Dare we say Portland money line and get a lot of us? Nah. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Robbie, I'm going to trust you because I can't really yell at Scott if he's wrong because I don't really have a great contact line to him, but I can definitely yell at you when you're wrong. So we're going to go Portland plus 6.5. And we'll definitely go with the under because you both agreed, and I tend to agree with it.
The biggest worry about the under, though, is if Booker and Lillard just go at each other. If they just start dropping, like, 40-point games, I'm just going to watch this and be like, okay, like, all that defense I was thinking about that was going to happen, that just went out the window.
Yep.
But it's so enticing because you're like, that's so high. All right, the last game, and I think this one is very interesting. I don't know – anything after the facts, like I just know what I know today. Wizards at Lakers. Lakers are minus 6.5. The over under is 226.5. I want you both to scream and squeal at the idea of thinking the AD-less Lakers would cover that spread, but also the Wizards are so incapable of winning games that I don't know.
Hey, they're on a 4-game win streak, man.
But still.
That's tough. That's tough, mainly because no AD. If there was an AD, 6.5 would be,
easily. Would be
so nice. And the over-under, I would probably take the over in this one. The Lakers do play a really slow pace of basketball, though. But the Wizards will let them score a lot because they have no defense, especially because they have no big men now. I mean, I don't know who their starting center is after they lost Bryant. I guess they both don't have centers.
What's the center?
It might be Lopez and Wagner. Yeah, off the bench. Yeah.
Hey, they signed Alex Len.
Oh, they did sign Alex Len. Yeah, go home.
I guess you can kind of just like not worry about centers for either team. So you're really just looking at the other four. I really want to take Lakers, but Beal and Westbrook have just been. On, I mean, Beal especially has been on it this year. Westbrook is still pretty inefficient, but like he gets points, and the Wizards don't play defense. I think I'm going to take the Wizards to cover.
And the over.
As weird as that is. And the over. Just because with no AD, that defense is going to be – and the Wizards like to push. So I'm going to take the over and Wizards. I hate taking the Wizards. Like, that's just – not that I don't like the Wizards. It's just such a tough thing to take them against the Lakers. I don't have them winning just to cover.
All right.
Yeah, that cover pick seems pretty nice. I'm going to quote a video I retweeted on our Twitter account the other day is Bradley Beal's getting buckets. That man can ball. Definitely the over. I'm 100%. Like, the Lakers, you're right, they do play a slow brand of basketball. But at the end of the day, if all they have to do is keep pace with a team that can't stop them, they'll score as many points as they have to score. 6.5. Shit.
It's not that much. That's why, like, I was thinking about Lakers.
It's just so hard to bet against LeBron, in my opinion. Like, even without Davis, like, at the end of the day, they could just – I mean, this could be a 40-point blowout. So, it's so tough not to say the safe pick and just say the Lakers. But I see the world, like I said, because Russell Westbrook's been playing well and the Wizards are on this hot streak. You know, let's say the Wizards will cover. Let's say – let's just keep it nice and even with what Scott said. I also think that it's very possible. So
– on a scale of 1 to 10, how confident do you feel about this Wizards cover?
3.
Like a
1. Like, even though I'm taking the Wizards to cover, it's more so that I have less faith in the Lakers blowing out the Wizards just because the Wizards can score. Not because I think the Wizards are, like, a good team that will win. Just because that's
right. Tough. That is good. I will do one more because I do want to see you guys. Well, I won't tell you what the game is. Do you want a game that's going to be kind of interesting to talk about, or do you want a game where the spread is going to make you want to squeal?
I mean, all of them so far have made me like.
Oh, trust me, this last one's going to make you real squeamish.
I want this squeal one. I want this battle.
Okay, yeah, go for it.
All right. Tomorrow, 9 o'clock, Hornets versus Jazz, -12.5 for the Jazz. Oh. What do you pick?
What's the over under?
228.
God, that's a horrible spread and over under. I'm not touching this game at all.
Oh God.
Give me just gut reactions. Go.
They're not going to lose by 12.5. Or they're not going to lose by 13 points. That's not going to happen. The Heat got killed by this Jazz team. But at the end of the day, like, the Hornets seem to be sticking in games for whatever reason. So I would say, fuck. I don't know.
Also, I would say fuck. Yes, that's perfectly describes the situation.
Yeah, let's just say the Hornets will cover.
I'm taking Jazz to cover. I'm sorry. The Jazz are one of the hottest teams in basketball, and the Hornets just beat a pretty tough Warriors team by 2 points that they probably should not have beat. But and they only – the under is intriguing here because the Jazz live and die by the three ball, and they're really good defensively. But the Hornets just, like, won a 90-88-point game, which no scoring. I really don't know, because if the Jazz are hitting and they're hot, they could push the over. But I'm going to go under, and I'm going to take the Jazz.
All right. God,
that's horrible.
Baker, you can be the tiebreaker here.
You know, I'm gonna align with Scott here and just say the Jazz are so good, right, they'll blow out the Hornets. But also, I went with you earlier, so now I can blame Scott if this goes horribly wrong.
I'll come back on. You can just yell at me for a solid minute. I'll bring you on for
10 minutes and just verbally abuse you.
I won't say anything. I wouldn't bet on this game.
Oh, like, no, it's horrible.
When I look at bets, like, I'm looking at ones that I think are locks, and all the ones you suggested are just terrible.
I know. That's what makes it fun, because it makes everyone squeamish.
That's great
content. I love it. That's actually really smart.
But thank you both for, one, making me laugh for how uncomfortable all of this was. But hopefully your picks come true. We'll definitely be posting about those tomorrow. And the best man will win. But for anyone listening, make sure to download Viget. Use our promo code ALLSTARS when you sign up. It helps us out tremendously. So, Scott, I better see you on there, or else I will verbally abuse you on Zoom.
I'll be downloading it tonight.
Sounds good.
All right, we're going to do one last segment here with the NBA All-Star starters having just been announced. The reserves list is going to be coming up on the horizon. We are going to give you our opinions on who we think the All-Star reserve should be. We're going to come to a consensus on some people, but then those ones that we differ, we're going to kind of dive into a little bit more. So I'll start it out here. I'm going to start on the Eastern Conference side of things. So the starting lineup was Kyrie Irving, Bradley Beal, Giannis, Durant, and Joel Embiid. So I basically split it as three guards and four forwards. It's essentially two guards, three forwards, and then two of whoever else you want. That's how it works for the NBA voting. So the three guards I have, the obvious two being Ben Simmons of the Sixers and James Harden of the Nets. I think they're pretty locked in either way. And then my big name that I'm throwing out here for the guards, I think Malcolm Brogdon is going to be that third all-star guard. I was between him, Trae Young, and Van Vliet. I don't think Trae Young deserves shit this year. I think the Hawks are an embarrassment to what they were supposed to be, and his stats aren't as fun and exciting as last year. Van Vliet was the other guy just because the Raptors, they haven't fully turned it around, but they're much better than their ugly start. And Van Vliet's been balling. But at the end of the day, Malcolm Brogdon is averaging 20 points, 6.5 assists, very high player efficiency rating, very low or very, very good assist to turnover ratio. And this Pacers team, where it's a slightly unimpressive record, they're the five seed, and they've been the five seed the entire season so far. Essentially, they've been solidified, they've been consistent. Sabonis will be an all-star, and I'll get to that in a moment, but that third guard for me, picking Brogdon.
Whew, wow. Boy, it's hard to disagree with that, because I don't think there's been a whole lot of really good guards in the East. Like, Kemba Walker last year was like an all-star, couldn't care less about him this year.
He was also injured a lot too. Yeah, he didn't play a lot.
Don't defend Boston sports on here. That's going to get you kicked off. No, but you're 100% right. Trae Young has not been having as good of a year as he did last year. you know, like a gut reaction is like Emmanuel quickly, but he's definitely not averaging nearly enough to even be close. Well, but the floater game is nice. I'm just saying.
Let me ask this. So do you both have Simmons and Harden?
I agree with Simmons as a biased Sixers fan, but I could see him getting not snubbed, but I could see him not making in because the media hates him.
I definitely have Harden. I definitely have Harden.
I agree with Harden.
I figured you did. I think Simmons before I was thinking maybe Jaylen Brown.
But is he a guard though?
I think he's a forward.
I think he's a guard. Is he a forward?
He's I think listed as a forward.
In theory, the if guards he's listed, for them are Walker and Smart. It's the same thing with the Heat where technically the guards are whoever the point guard is that given day and Duncan Robinson and Jimmy is technically a forward.
Okay, well then if we put Brown as a forward, then I will definitely do Harden, Simmons for sure. Who's the third you said, Robbie? Brogdon?
I said Malcolm Brogdon.
I think Brogdon's interesting because, like you said, like Pacers are doing, I think, well. Like, I don't think anyone expected them to do better. They're doing pretty good, and they're being led by Brogdon and Sabonis. I mean, Turner's good, but he'll also have some games where he gets, like, 5 blocks, 3 rebounds, and 2 points. And you're like,
yeah,
he's great defensively, but he's not as present offensively all the time. Brogdon has been really good. I just don't see him being an all-star. I have from the East – now, this might be Homer for me. I'm good with Harden, Simmons, and LaVine. I think Zach LaVine.
That's true, yeah.
As a guard, I mean, obviously the Bulls aren't winning, and that should be taken into some consideration when picking. But LaVine is putting up all-star numbers through and through. I think he's averaging 30-something points and just very efficient, just a stellar player. And obviously from the Chicago market, so I try not to push that too much. But my three would be Harden, LaVine, and Simmons.
I like that a lot. Simmons was a big snub for, or excuse me, LaVine was a big snub for me. I actually had him in the way I judge it based ahead of Trae Young also. So I don't mind that pick quite as much as general media may. And so Baker, you said you had Simmons, you had Harden. Who's your third guy?
I throw in one other name, and this is more just to play devil's advocate, Jrue Holiday. Okay. I think that's it's one that gets kind of lost because you have Middleton and Giannis, but I think he's been statistically playing well this season. I think it's been obviously a good piece that the Bucks added. So that's one of those kind of gets thrown in there as sort of a random one, but I think that's worth it. LaVine is also a great pick if he goes as a guard. And I honestly forget he's a guard, even though he's kind of big for one. So
yeah. Definitely on the taller side, at least 6'5". So that looking like the East, I'm very glad that we pretty consensusly didn't have Trae Young in here. I'm going to be honest. I expect him to make the All-Star game based off of name value, but at the
it's
end
also
of the,
in Atlanta.
Yeah.
They want some representation.
That honestly might be the ceiling ticket for him, to be completely honest. I didn't realize that it was in Atlanta.
I mean, when the Bulls had the All-Star game, we had no All-Stars. Saddest city ever. Continue.
Haven't you guys not really had an All-Star since Derrick Rose though?
Jimmy.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, wow. All right, that's bad on me. moving on. So we're going to go to the front court now here. So I have four spots here. My 100% certified lock is Domantas Sabonis. That dude is an animal. 21.5, 11.5. Like I said, the Pacers are doing real well this year. My other forwards, I think Jaylen Brown will be the one and only Boston Celtic. I think Bam Adebayo is as close to a lock as you'll give a team who has struggled this year. And so the last four, like the reason I picked Bam is because he's been in the Heat's lineup all year. He's been the Heat's best player just based off of being able to consistently play. He's averaging career highs in everything but rebounding and the ability to guard multiple positions. The one that I know is really going to make people cringe is I have picked two Miami Heat. I also did pick Jimmy Butler. Jimmy's all-star spot really came down to how much better he is than the other guys in contention for it. The other two names that I really brought up were Tobias Harris of the Sixers and Julius Randle of the Knicks. I don't think the Bucks are getting a second, which is why I leave Chris Middleton out of this, and I don't think Jason Tatum's played enough. But when I look at Jimmy, I look at Toby, and I look at Randle, it just comes down to Jimmy is better. If the Heat were two seeds higher and in the actual top eight, this wouldn't even be a discussion. Like, Jimmy would have his all-star spot. But with how much the Heat have struggled, I very much understand that they don't deserve two All-Stars. But if you're trying to pick who the best players in the conference are and you leave Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo off that list, you're going to have to take it up with me. I'll say that.
did you say that you don't think Tatum should be an All-Star because he hasn't played enough?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you know that he played six more games than Jimmy Butler?
I do know that. Believe the difference in skill level between Jimmy and Tatum makes up for that.
I just saying, like, if you're going to argue what? That Tatum hasn't played enough, but you're going to have a guy that played less. I'm a huge Butler fan, ex-Bulls there, and I was cheering for him over LeBron as a LeBron hater. It was real fun jumping on the Jimmy wagon again. Let's see, for front court, it's tough. I think Sabonis is a lock. I think us three all agree on that. Alex looks like, okay, I wasn't sure if you agree.
No, I am, sorry.
So your other, did you say we have three more?
Yeah, so Sabonis plus three more.
You have Bam, you have Butler, and
Jaylen Brown.
I'm good with Brown as well. I thought he was a guard, but like if we're going to take him as a forward, I think he should make it for that too.
So either way, Jaylen Brown's in it though.
For me, yeah.
Yeah, same.
All right. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I'm curious what you have before I go.
Sabonis, that's a consensus. Yeah, I get that. I will say Jason Tatum, and I will fight you over the fact that you even questioned the idea of Jimmy Butler deserving it more than Jason Tatum this year.
That's disgusting. Like,
he has played so little games, though. Oh, my goodness. All right.
Hey, man, 4 triple-doubles in 5 games. That's all. That was the big thing for me, is that Jimmy Butler didn't – like, I know the Heat's record hasn't changed a significant amount as it should have with Jimmy coming back, but his performance is back-to-back-to-back triple-doubles, 4 and 5 games. Statistically speaking, which obviously isn't everything, he's far and beyond better than Tatum outside of just straight-up shooting the basketball.
But – it does. The impact he had has been so bleh for the first half of the season, and I just want to let you know that
it's so tough with basketball, because the stats that you mainly look at are offensive, with points and assists and three in shooting percentages. I mean, I guess rebound's a defensive stat, but you can also have offensive rebounding, so that's kind of just like a third category. With defense, all you can look at is steals and blocks, and Jimmy is a far better lockdown defender. But I think, just again, Tatum's played really well. He's played 6 more games. He means a lot more to that Celtics team, I think. Not that Butler does not mean less to the Heat. I think that for me, I had actually Tatum as a lock, Brown as a lock, and Sabonis. Those three were locks for me for the Eastern Reserves. The fourth is really where I get a little iffy.
Yeah.
I guess I had two that were – this is more to play just – you know, add a little bit of interesting chaos to it. I'm going to pick two first timers. I'm going to say Jeremy Grant, because he's had a great season. He's on a terrible team, and I get that. But at the same time, it's more of a stats. This is kind of statistics based, and he's been putting up pretty good numbers. And I can't ignore it. I got to say Julius Randle, just from the fact that the Knicks have sucked for so many years, and he is their, not their lone bright spot, but he's definitely a lot of the reason why they're doing pretty well. So I think those are two you just sort of give to them to sort of spread it out versus just the top five seeds getting everyone.
Yeah, I don't think you can get mad with Julius Randle being an all-star. First of all, when's the last time the Knicks had an all-star that wasn't Melo? And second, yeah, I mean, they're a playoff team. At the end of the day, if you're doing this list and you're really taking into consideration standing, and you definitely put Julius Randle over one of those two Heat players, especially being Jimmy with how little he's played. So I got nothing against Julius Randle being one of those guys. Grant, though, I love Jeremy Grant. Don't get me wrong. I think he's having a sensational year. I think he is really starting to hit his stride as an NBA player. But if you're putting a Detroit Piston in the All-Star game, and it's because, like, Jimmy missed too many games, or Tatum missed too many games, like, at the end of the day, put the better player in.
Spread the love. The dude's got energy. He'll have Atlanta blowing up there, and you know I'm not wrong.
It's not that I wouldn't love to see him there. It's just this is supposed to be the highest echelon of basketball. Jeremy Grant is not a part of that.
It's an all-star game no one really gives a shit about.
It's what it's supposed to be.
I will say Randall is having a great season, and that should be given some, like, props. I mean, he's shooting above 40% from three, which is actually really shocking. 23-10-5. His defensive numbers are trash, I'm not gonna lie. He's averaging 0.7 steals and 0.2 blocks. Like, he is accumulating really good offensive numbers. He's also coached by Tibbs, who plays veterans and his players about 50 minutes a game. So he's averaging 36 minutes, and he'll leave him in even if they're getting blown out. So that does help him. So it's kind of tough for me to have Randall. I'm totally good with Sabonis, Brown, Tatum. I don't hate Bam. And I think that could be a super homer pick by Robbie. It but is. Like Bam's great at scoring, yep. Good rebounder, even though he might not be getting career highs in rebounding. He's getting 5 assists per game, which is probably means he's like the second best passing big man in the league.
Third if you count Giannis.
I'm talking like strictly center.
Yeah.
So I'd put him up there. I actually don't hate the Grant though. Like Jeremy Grant, I think he's having a breakout year. Could be probably the most improved player. He's probably going to win that.
The problem with my list though is I put so many power forwards in there, and like beside with the exception of Embiid, there's no centers in there other than Bam, and there needs to be a second center.
That's what happens though in the All-Star game. Like most of the years, is you only have one center per side. It's crazy.
Well, I mean, you think about it. There's Embiid and there's Jokic. They're the clear best centers in basketball. They're also the clear only complete centers in basketball. Like Kat is just offense. Rudy Gobert is just defense. Bam is this weird hybrid that we haven't quite seen much of.
Anthony Davis is a power forward.
Drummond and Adams, they're on a different level at this point. They're a little lower. Like you're not going to see many centers. Like you see Embiid and Jokic, they dominate so much because they're so good at what they do, but there's also not really anyone else to do it. Like Bam and Gobert are probably the third and fourth best centers in the league, and they're a pretty far step from Jokic and Embiid.
I completely agree. So if we're going to try to come up with some consensus for our fourth pick, I would go Randall or Bam, honestly. Like I do like Grant, but I think you got to give a little nod to Randall and what he's doing with this Knicks team, or you give it to Bam, who I think is the better player, but the Heat have struggled, so.
So yeah, that would be my final question. With Boston, you have Tatum and Brown in. Which is more deserving? Boston getting 2 or Philly getting 3? Because we haven't mentioned much of Tobias Harris, but he's having a career year this season.
I think Boston would be more inclined to have 2 before Philly would get Tobias Harris in there. Not to say Tobias Harris is like undeserving of it, but he falls by the wayside when you're looking at like Brown and Tatum. And that's even as a biased Sixers fan.
Yeah. The Celtics, it's a dynamic duo. It's the Brown and Tatum show. And when you're talking about the Sixers, no one mentions, oh yeah, you got Simmons and Embiid dominating. Oh, and also Tobias Harris. I love Tobias Harris. I think he's the most boring basketball player on the planet, but I love him. Like, I mean, that dude just gets buckets. He gets rebounds, doesn't really slam it, doesn't do anything fancy, but he's a great basketball player. I love watching him. So I love the nod to him, but I think that Tatum and Brown should get in before him. Yeah. So who would you pick, Bam or Randall for the last spot?
I mean, you don't want to ask me that question. Like if you're again, because I look at this because they're very close in the standings. They're, I think, the Knicks are the actual 8, the Heat are the 10, but the Heat won their 2 games against the Knicks. And if you're talking about who's the better basketball player at that point, it's Bam, and it's not close.
I'll give it to Bam just because I do like
fine,
this.
Fine, I'll do it. We'll consensus.
You can take Jimmy from me. You can take Jimmy from me.
Jimmy wasn't even the question. Don't even start with that. Like,
Bam is arguably a top 3 center. At some point, he makes the All-Star game because he deserves to be in the All-Star game.
I'm just going to give it to Bam just because, like, although Randall, if he gets in over Bam, I'm not going to be mad. It's just that I think Bam, he's, you know, almost 20 points, 10 rebounds, and 5 is almost 6 assists. He's pretty efficient, and he gets a steal and a block per game, while Randall gives nothing defensively, and he gets some bonus stats just by playing 3 extra minutes, 4 extra minutes a game. So, yeah.
Very, very fair. All right. That's the East. Still got a whole other half of this to do. Love that.
Boy.
Lots of basketball. So the biggest – okay, so first the starters in the West, there was one really big surprise. That was Luka Doncic, despite the Mavericks' struggles this year. But name-wise, makes a lot of sense. So it was him, Curry, LeBron, Kawhi, and Jokic, pretty standard with especially Anthony Davis, more than likely not going to be an All-Star this year. So given that, there's kind of an extra spot open. Start with the guards, the backcourt for the West. I've got Damian Lillard as a certified lock. I've got Donovan Mitchell as a certified lock.
Good.
And then my third could be one of two, but I pick Chris Paul over Devin Booker, but I think it's going to be one of those two.
I had Lillard and Booker as locks with Mitchell as my third.
I agree with Scott here, but yeah. Like I don't hate the Chris Paul one, but I think Devin Booker is more deserving of an All-Star appearance. So I think we're at consensus there for the most part. Damian Lillard obviously is a lock because he was the tiebreaker between him and Luka. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, pretty straightforward there. You say Mitchell wasn't a lock though, Scott. I just want to I think if you have a pretty clear best team in the NBA record-wise, their best player should be a lock in the – that's just my opinion, obviously. But, like, also Donovan Mitchell has done so much for the – I mean, he is their heart and soul. So to be that important to a franchise and to have that franchise only have six losses by the time we're talking about this, I see no world where Mitchell isn't punching his ticket.
I could have misspoke there, I guess. But, like, I think without a doubt for me, Lillard and Booker belong. And I think Mitchell should be in it because I think he is the best player on the best team in basketball right now. It's just, I think that for the Jazz are playing such good team basketball and it's very, you know, every man has a role. I mean, Clarkson off the bench is putting up numbers. Gobert defensively is great. So I think for me, it's like, if you got rid of Booker on the Suns, they're screwed. If you get rid of Lillard from the Trailblazers, they are literally the worst team in basketball. You get rid of Mitchell, they might not be they're not going to be the first team, but they will still be a playoff team, which is crazy. They were playing that well as a team. Obviously, that's a huge loss, but I think for me, it's Lillard, Booker, and Mitchell are the three guards.
I can definitely get down with Booker also. Got nothing against that. I was between him and Paul. I just think that what Paul has added, making them a almost made the playoff team to like top four very solidly. He's an all-defensive player. He is one of, if not the best playmaking point guards we have. That was my thought for Chris Paul, but I also kind of watching last year was like, this could be Chris Paul's last All-Star game.
That's like a big thing that I was thinking when you mentioned Paul. I'm like, he might just get it because like they always want the veteran, or they want that, like Vince Carter last year, his last All-Star chance. And we didn't really feel that last time with Paul. So I feel like he'll get an All-Star before he retires.
Yeah, that'd be a fun little nice thing. Something maybe like when Dirk and Wade kind of got in their last years as just a nice little thank you from the NBA. The front court here, though, a lot of big names. But again, that Anthony Davis spot is wide open. So I'll just go down. I don't necessarily have any locks for these. I think Rudy Gobert is going to make it.
I
think
two.
Paul George is going to make it. I think there's no way he doesn't. He's having a great year. My issue with Paul was, is he a guard or is he a forward? But sure. Either way, he's in. I have Zion instead of Brandon Ingram. I do not have them both solely because they're bad. But Zion's the one I pick. He's straight up the more exciting one to watch. And my little brother shared me this amazing stat that Zion Williamson and Jason Tatum are averaging the same amount of points per game, but Zion is shooting 20% better from the field. So I'll throw that little nugget out there when you're trying to give me this Tatum for Jimmy shit bullshit, but whatever. And then the final name that I have, which is my biggest kind of shocking one, is DeMar DeRozan. And that's mostly
because the success. No, you stole that from me. I had that too. I was like, DeMar DeRozan is a gem.
Well, let's talk about that. Scott, do you have DeMar DeRozan, or are we going to have to defend ourselves here?
No, I don't have DeMar DeRozan. I love DeMar DeRozan. Isn't he like technically a power forward now, is what he's been listed as?
Power forward, I guess.
That's absurd. No, I'm completely on board with Gobert and Paul George. Obviously, I would put Davis in, but I think that he's either going to get it and then someone's going to take his spot due to injury. I'm actually curious to see, like, I know we're coming up with this list and we're thinking extensively, but if one of these teams gets COVID, like they could miss two guys in the All-Star game, and then we get two more random guys.
Yeah, that's how Jeremy Grant gets in.
So we're doing four?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would probably do – Williamson for me is my third after Gobert and George.
Mm-hmm.
God, fourth? I don't really have one listed right now, so like I don't know if I can argue DeMar DeRozan. I think he's fantastic. I just don't know if he's playing that caliber of basketball right now.
That's fair. I was just looking at the front court members that are really up there, and it's like I pick DeRozan over Aldridge versus Spurs. They're having good success. The only other name that even felt worth bringing up is Brandon Ingram, but again, I don't, you know, if the Heat don't get two All-Stars, you definitely don't give the Pelicans two All-Stars. So I don't quite see, like, he is better than DeRozan, but the Spurs have had a great year. Last week we talked a little bit about Pop maybe being a dark horse as a coach of the year candidate, and DeRozan's the best player on the sixth seed Spurs. I like him. Baker, what did you like about DeRozan?
Well, it's partially due to the fact that the Spurs are doing very well this year, and his statistics, at least the advanced ones, are actually really, really impressive. Like, there, it goes Kawhi, LeBron, and then our boy DeMar DeRozan at third, which, you know, I know we can't look at everything statistically, but it's the best way to kind of gauge someone's performance if you're not watching them every night. So I'd give DeRozan a nod just from veteran perspective as well. I mean, he seems to be a really loved, beloved person in the NBA. Zion, I absolutely love because the man is shooting like 60%, which is literally other level. And I know you have your gripes about him. So if you want him, I 100% am on board with that. Rudy Gobert, maybe the most boring player in the West, but at the same time, consistent night in, night out. I gotta be that asshole and say Brandon Ingram, though. I know the Pelicans don't deserve two players, but like, come on, the dude is basically Kevin Durant. If he's like he's a lesser version of Kevin Durant, basically.
He's a poor man's Durant. That's what he is.
Poor man's Durant. Yeah, there you go.
No, I don't hate it, especially when it like I said, like there a large reason why I picked Jimmy Butler was because of just what I believe the skill difference to be between him and all the other players in that conversation. With Ingram, he is the best option available. He is better than DeMar DeRozan, at least in my opinion. But again, they have a worse record than the Miami Heat. So are you really going to justify that? Brandon Ingram is super fun to watch, but at the end of the day, how much are you losing in entertainment value between Brandon Ingram and DeMar DeRozan, who is a very underrated athletic player? He can jam. He's not, and it's not quite as fun as his Toronto days, but I mean, like you said, he puts up important statistics for a team that is playing way better than they maybe should be.
Did Nikola Jokic, was he a starter?
Yeah.
He's a starter. Yeah.
I have a wrong list, and it's Durant, Harden.
Well, Durant's
Kawhi.
No, it's the Are you starter.
Reading last year?
What was that?
Are you reading last year?
No, who's the starters for the West Conference this year? Because Jokic is on there, right?
Curry, Luka, LeBron, Kawhi, Jokic.
Okay. Yeah, I have they're completely wrong. I think if we're gonna go Ingram or DeRozan, I'm taking Ingram all day. I think he's a walking bucket. I think he can shoot the ball. He drives to the hoop. He rebounds. He assists. He literally is a knockoff Kevin Durant right now. And he's playing very good basketball. And that's not like. That's not a bad thing to be 75% of what Kevin Durant can do. I was thinking Christian Wood, mainly because his name sounds like a porn star name, but sure. He's also, only 17 games. Like if we're not going to let Butler in, there's no way we can do Wood. He is averaging 22 and 10. He's been playing great, but the fact that he got hurt, that's going to be a no. So if we're doing four, I would probably do George Gobert, Williamson and Ingram, which is weird to give the Pelicans to, but Williamson is doing such amazing things this early in his career, and Ingram is just consistent and just a walking bucket. Like, I can't say no to him.
Yeah. Again, my only real gripe with Ingram is the lack of success that team has had. It's like, I don't think they deserve to, but skill-wise, it's pretty clear that he's going to be deserving to be in this game for many years to come. Final thoughts, Alex, on DeRozan versus Ingram for that last spot?
I put both in because I am just that wonderful neutral party. But I feel like people would give an edge to Ingram just from the younger age. Like DeRozan's been there, done that type thing. But, I would like to see DeRozan back in the All-Star game again.
All right. Well, place your bets on all of us on all of these as well. You know, we're certified, know what we're talking about.
Absolutely.
any last thoughts here on the reserves, or we get out everything I think we wanted to get to?
I think we covered it pretty extensively. Like this is the type of stuff you would only find at Gym Class All-Stars or the Big Slumpin' Podcast.
Yeah. Like we might go over this too. I'm sure we're all my guys are going to think LaVine belongs and is a lock. Cause we're all Bulls fans. Josh is a Raptor fan though. So he's going to be trying to get Siakam, Lowry and Van Vliet in the All-Star game.
I was about to say he might listen to this and get mad that we didn't even mention Pickleman.
I mean, we did not mention Siakam whatsoever, which that could be deserving, but he has had kind of an iffy year.
He's too inconsistent on my fantasy team, and he's been very he puts up some great games, but he's also inconsistent. Was shooting low. Yeah, it's the inconsistency. And
when he wants to be the best player on the court, he can be really good. Like he can do it all when he's aggressive. It's just some days it looks like he's a little too scared, and it just sucks, and he just spins.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he has one move.
So which is awesome for me to watch. I'm sure Josh hates it, but. Yeah, he's going to try to push, like, Aaron Baines as a potential reserve, and I'm going to be like,
good man.
Maybe, but let's cool it a little bit on that. I like this list. I honestly think that we, like, did pretty well. I'm going to need to keep this for when we argue because I'll save myself some time. But, no, this is solid.
Make sure you impart our
wisdom
as much as possible. You
I'll
know.
I'll definitely mention that I came on Gym Class All-Stars and got some feedback before I came with my final list.
You brought in your top analysts. You know, you were really, really diving deep into this one.
My sources.
All right. That is all we have for you guys for this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Scott, thank you very much for coming on again. Don't forget to check out this guy's show, Big Slumpin' Podcast. Who knows? Maybe we'll pop on you guys a show at some point in the future. Could always be fun. But again, thank you to our listeners. Hope you all enjoyed, and we will be back with more basketball, football, baseball, anything else y'all want us to report on next week. We got you guys.
Take care, guys. Thanks for listening. And to anyone who is still here, make sure to retweet our tweet because Robbie has COVID. And if we get 5,000 retweets, Robbie's COVID will go away. So thank you, guys. We love you, and take care.